And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off?
All right. What is this? This looks good.
Wow, that's well made.
Where did you get this? I'm talking to you, with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to At The Movies with me, Umar Pagan and PK Pagan. After 14 years of wild speculation over what would become of Chinta and Ranga, let me tell you, I've had my very own fanfic bumping around in my head. After 14 years, fans finally get an answer in Ada Apa Dengan Chinta Dua. Dian Sastro and Nicholas Saputra reprise their now classic roles in a sequel that feels as fresh as the original. Joining me today to break down this movie for you, Tasha Fusil and Ali Johan. Guys, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks.
So, was it just me who thought that this sequel felt almost as fresh as the original?
I felt the same. I think 14 years on, and it still feels like something that if you didn't catch the first movie, you still understand it if you watch the second one.
And I think that was very important, right? The idea that I still have an emotional connection to these characters and I care about their story.
Yeah, I think they did a really good job in the beginning. They set it up so that you get invested very early on because they give you the, you know, a little almost a round table explanation of what everyone's been up to. So even though you're not, even though you can't remember what happened in the first one, you're still intrigued, you're still pulled in.
So I was sitting in the cinema and I was timing it and it was a good 45 minutes before Chinta and Ranga meet again. And for me, in a two-hour film, that's great because the build-up of that tension, the tension was palpable.
Yep. And I lost my mind.
Oh.
When both of them were on screen together and we had to wait that 45 minutes. But it was built up in a very, it's a great way. They weren't really making references to the first movie, but they were including it in their scripts like, oh, when you broke up with me 9 years ago. So suddenly you know, like, oh, damn, this breakup happened 9 years ago without really going back to the first movie and how it panned out.
Because there are bits of their relationship that was not in the first or the second movie, right?
Yes, precisely.
Well, what we gather is after the events of the first movie, they were dating for a short period of time and then suddenly he decides to break up with her using a letter. And that is the primary hook or conflict in the movie, right?
Padil,
it's not
padil.
Really a spoiler, but you know, yeah, padil. Yeah, exactly. Because she opens up that letter within the first 10 minutes of the film. And I think at that point of time, I actually heard Tasha go...
I was gasping and crying and just like cried, like rolled in my seat. Just, you know, it was a very emotional experience for me.
Yeah.
It's impossible not to draw comparisons to Richard Linklater's Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, and those films, because that's what it seems this movie is trying to channel. Now, I'm going to say something quite controversial in that I think this one pulls it off a little better than his sequels. This is the story of two people and the conversations they're having. And they're very real conversations that you would have with someone who maybe once broke your heart. And for some reason, the writing is so strong that I am compelled to care about this conversation. That's all this movie is. It's so simple. And yet there's so much emotional resonance.
Yeah. And I think I like how the rest of the characters, Dian's other friends, her girls,
Carmen, Maura, Millie.
Yeah. And everyone else around it, Millie's husband, they all were schoolmates. And then in this movie, they've all grown up and everybody has developed like a character.
Enough of a backstory.
Yes. So that, I like that a lot because then you can tell, oh, you know, this girl turned into a MILF. This one is now out of a rehab and then blah, blah, blah. Right. So, and it's very, it's not elaborate. It's just like simple.
For sure. In fact, I think I was watching it with a little bit of envy, you know, one, like thinking, wow, this is a friendship that really like stood the test of time. And it seemed like they knew each other inside out, you know, and everything down to the humor, what to expect from each person, how Millie was a very silly girl and like everybody kind of made jokes about that, that you can feel the connection.
Yeah, there's chemistry. The on-screen chemistry is almost, I mean, it is real. And I mean, from the reports that I've read, they are friends off screen as well. But of course, you know, they're all actors, so they don't hang out as much. But this seems like they've been spending a lot of time together from that day that Ranga left to the States 15 years ago until that moment when they saw him again.
Can we talk about something else, which I really enjoyed about this movie? The scenes that were shot in New York, they were very, I thought they were very interestingly juxtaposed with the stuff in Jakarta, in that Ranga makes this statement towards the end of the film where he talks about the difference between going somewhere as a tourist and going somewhere as a traveler. And what I thought the director did very well was that the scenes set in New York were not the scenes of a tourist, mm-hmm. which is what a lot of our movies would do. They'd pan towards the Statue of Liberty. They'd pan towards some popular landmark because, hey, it's New York. We've got a budget to shoot in New York. No, he seems to have shot scenes in the burbs.
Yeah.
In a coffee shop somewhere. It yeah. feels like the kind of places a traveler would go to.
Yeah, and it gave the impression that he went away to be a working class guy and not live in New York and just leaving Jakarta, the slummy, whatever Jakarta is.
but wasn't that, couldn't you feel that kind of authenticity in Jogja as well?
I did to a certain extent. Sometimes with Jogja, I get caught up in the whole touristy nature of it, because they were there on holiday as well. The characters were there at a villa and, you know, they were going to a fancy nightclub or a hipster coffee joint. And I think the authenticity came to me, and I won't spoil it, but the authenticity came to me towards the end when Ranga takes Chinta to this special place he has, right? And he's like, you know, I bet you've never been here before.
Ranga sets the standards.
Yeah,
after
that's the spot right yeah. there. That's a spot,
you.
Man.
Look at both of you. When Ali Johan said he lost his mind when they were both on screen together, you just lost your mind when Chinta came on the screen.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, there was a lot of buzz going on about this movie. And before it came out, I think they did a promo video of a minute and a half of what happened. And I thought that was going to be the premise of the show, the movie. But turns out it's quite the opposite. But it's still that thing, like, you know, you rekindle old romance. And these two particularly were really huge for me. When I saw the first movie, I think I had just left school. And, you know, the characters were the same age. And then now you watch this movie, they are 15 years older, and I'm, 15 years older as well, you know, so it's cool.
And, you know, that's one of the big takeaways I had from the first movie, in that for me, it felt like Can't Hardly Wait, or some American teen.
10 Things I Hate About You, that's how I agree, yeah.
She's
Heath
All
Ledger,
That.
Yeah.
And what it was for me, it wasn't the production value or anything like that, but it was the banter among these students and how they stuck together, how they were all members of this geeky publication / club. And it felt very real because those seemed to be similar conversations I would have with my classmates at the time. And I remember watching it and thinking, why aren't we making movies like this in Malaysia? Because it seems so simplistic, almost. Even this one, it seems so simple.
But that's the thing, that's what's great about it. There's no drama. I mean, there's that intense drama of the love story itself is a huge unraveling drama, but the way it's just approached, I mean, there's, you know, there was no violence involved. You know, if you look at all the romance movies in Malaysia, most that I've seen, the love sort of stems from some serious violence, like
there's
in
battery
Rindu.
Or there's rape.
Yeah. This one's just so delicate and just so real. Like it could happen to you or me.
Yep.
Also, the other important thing about this film, it didn't hit the standard tropes. Just when I thought something was going to happen. So there's a formula for rom-coms, right? They're wooing each other and then they get together. Then he or she finds out a secret about the other person and then something falls apart. And then at the end, they come back together again. This movie kind of broke those tropes because the Linklater reference is accurate in that sense. It's a narrative arc of these two individuals. It plays out like a real conversation. Because obviously, if I'm watching Sleepless in Seattle or some other American rom-com, I've never had a moment like that in my life. This kind of great, drastic, tragic moment that threatens to tear us apart only to bring us back together again. No, this one felt like the ups and downs of a very real relationship.
But at the same time, they seem to be really in tune or with their feelings and their emotions. You know, they could really lay it out. I would have so much trouble. Okay, so there's just that initial conversation that they have after having not seen each other for 9 years, and she's laying it out. She's like, this is why I'm seeing you. And the way she just delivered it to him, like every point, like it was so spot on. I'm like, damn, I wish I could do that when I have arguments with my boyfriend.
So wait. Is that something then we're saying that we Malaysians are incapable of doing.
I don't know. I don't know whether it's like just me or is communication that open and that...
You know, it's funny. I've seen a lot of Indonesian movies and they feel like they're better expressing their feelings.
Exactly.
And it comes across in the scripting, and maybe it is a function of their cultural upbringing.
I guess so. I got to touch on the scripting as well this time around. And I just have to, again, compare it to the first one. When they were in high school, right? So the script was kind of tough to get because it was like street speak. Budak-budak sekolah with language.
I needed subtitles.
Right. But this time around, even the Bahasa Indonesia that they use is not very thick. It's not very local. It's almost universal.
Well, it's how grown-ups would speak.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. As opposed to how teenagers would speak. Yeah. So even the script has evolved in the 14 years it's taken them to make this movie.
So you don't think it was modified somehow to appeal to maybe a Malaysian audience?
Maybe not. I think it was modified somehow to appeal to...
Well, your generation who grew up 14 years later.
Yeah. So the same bunch of people who saw the first one are going to watch this when they're older, our age, and think like, oh, I don't need the subtitles anymore because I can understand how, even without the script, you know, the way they were just panning the shots and how it was made in general is much more, it's much less shot sendiri, you know?
If I have one criticism of the movie, the music was a little all over the place.
Yes. I have a big issue with the scoring. I mean, you go first.
No, that's all, right? I think we have the same problem in the sense that they would use the weirdest notes to punctuate dramatic moments.
Yep.
And I was like, actually, that's not necessary because the actors, their emotions, it's done it for me. I don't need a sudden string movement coming in going,
And on the first movie, Melly Goslow and husband Antu Hood did the scoring, the soundtrack, the theme
song. And Melly Goslow did the soundtrack for this one as well.
She's back on the movie this time, but they rehashed old sounds from the first movie, but turned it into a MIDI sequence version of it, which sounds cheap. And the mixing's over the place. When a sound bit comes on, it somehow like hits you in the face as opposed to like just ease you into it.
It drowns out some of the emotion.
Exactly. So that's my biggest thing about, and you know how it's hard to find a perfect kind of flick. And when those imperfections came out, I felt like, you know, after all, it's still a, I wouldn't say it's still an Indonesian movie. I think it's still an Asian production, which is sad.
Well, I didn't notice the music. Unfortunately, I was too carried away with the love story. I was really in it.
I felt like I needed to give her a hug afterwards.
I cried. I was crying basically for the entire duration of the film.
Well done.
Yeah, good job, guys. My gripe, I think I've shared this with you guys, is the wardrobe. That's the only thing I wasn't so down with. It seemed almost as if she was styled by two different people. There are some moments where some scenes where she looked really good, really on point, exactly what you would expect. Someone like her who works at a gallery, someone who's, you know, in very culturally in tune, very up to date, would wear. And then suddenly out of nowhere she wears these really random things that you would
Some days you dress down.
Would you dress down to meet the love of your life?
Whoa, yeah, you're right. No.
Yeah.
Right. So that was a big showdown and she chose that.
That outfit. Come on, girl.
Ada Apa Dengan Cinta Dua is now in cinemas. Tell us your thoughts about the film. I'm on Twitter at Uma Pagan and at The Movies MY. Tasha Ali, are you guys on Twitter?
Nope.
Anyway, you can tweet them at BFM Radio and just tag Ali Johan, I think you're right, or I think you're wrong. Tasha Fusil, I cried too. Do all of that. And don't forget, you can find more episodes of this fine program on bfm.my/movies. Last week, Ian McNally, Gavin Yap and I gushed over Captain America Civil War. Go check it out. There is a lot of geekery there. You've been listening to At The Movies. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off?
All right. What is this? This looks good.
Wow, that's well made. Where did you get this? I'm talking to you with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.